What's up, everybody? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Tuesday, September 4th, 2018. I'm one of your hosts, Greg Miller, alongside David Jagno from Upload VR.
That's me, David Jagno.
I was terrified. You know how terrified I am of screwing up your name. Because I saw it, and I swear to God, Jagno. That I was like, I know it's got the spelling like the Saints, and I don't know why I thought it was New Saints when I know it's Go Saints. I'm an idiot. How are you, David?
I'm doing fantastic, man. It's a good Tuesday, good post-holiday.
Yeah.
I know you guys didn't take much time off, but I'm feeling pretty recharged right now.
Did you take some time off yesterday?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Lots of firewall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me and the wife are hopping on that hard.
For somebody who doesn't know you, you're the games editor, is that right, over at Upload VR?
Yes. So okay. That's my full-time thing is the games editor at UploadVR.com. But I also freelance on the side for non-VR games.
Okay.
Yeah, so I write for IGN. I work with Dan a lot. Do a lot of reviews.
Yeah. Yep.
I write for Game Crate. I've written for VG247,
sure.
PC Games N. My first thing for PC Gamer goes up this week.
Oh, dude, congratulations. How long have you been doing this? How long have you been working in games?
About 7 years. I first got started as a sort of a volunteer writer for one of those many sites that, you know,
we can't pay you, but we can give you exposure and give you cracks.
Exactly.
Give you some at-bats.
And it was super helpful. It was fantastic. The Coalition is the name of the site. And I went to my first E3 with them. I got into GDC. I got review copies. I started meeting people, networking, and then I started writing for different sites from there and just kept going along that way.
Sure.
A lot of stepping stones and doing all that on the side while I still went to school, while I worked full time.
Yeah.
Just grinding the old fashioned way.
don't acknowledge it. I dropped my pen. No, one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on, obviously, is I like VR a lot. You know, PlayStation VR, I'm a big fan of. And right now I thought it was a great time because of Firewall, obviously. And
right,
so I think that as usual, Kismet is intervened here because we're going to talk about Firewall. PlayStation gave us a bunch of codes to give away, game provided by PlayStation to give away. We'll talk about it at the end of the show when we talk about Firewall. But on top of that, there's a whole bunch of stuff today that's more like inside baseball video games in terms of questions from the audience. Whole bunch of Spider-Man questions, and then stuff happening over at Polygon. So I'm excited to have you along. We'll talk a little bit about your career a little bit, I think, through the questions.
Okay, that sounds awesome.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show. KindaFunny.com/KFGD with your questions, comments, bad PSN names, and everything else under the video game sun. Then make sure you watch us live as we record the show on Twitch.tv/KindaFunnyGames. If you're watching live, you have a special job to do. Go to KindaFunny.com/YoureWrong and tell us what we screw up as we screw it up so we can set the record straight for everybody watching later on YouTube.com/KindaFunnyGames and listening on podcast services around the globe.
No scripts today. I'm telling you right now.
Yeah, really? It's a perfect show?
Perfect
you do
show.
Not know this audience enough. I will make a joke and they will be very much like, well, actually, Greg sent this joke, but he meant, and I'll be like, you know what, capitalist pig? Shove it up your ass! Housekeeping for you. Shirtless Spider-Man is the fan mail tier over on Patreon.com/KindaFunnyGames. You can get a signed copy of the cover we got made with Andre, our friend, the comic book artist, as well as over on Patreon.com/KindaFunny. You can get an art print from Panda Musk of that there shirtless Spider-Man. Of course, our Spider-Man review, PlayStation 4, just posted on YouTube.com/KindaFunnyGames and on the Kind of Funny Gamescast podcast services list. You can check that out. It is spoiler-free. A lot of the questions we'll bring up later on in the show are from that there review and what we talked about. RTX London is next week. You can find our full schedule at kindoffunny.com/RTX London. It's my first time in London. I'm very excited to get over there.
I've never been either. I've never been out of the U.S.
What? How old are you?
I know. I'm 27.
Yeah, that makes sense. You young kids over here not doing anything.
I'm from Texas as well, so we kind of tend to just not leave Texas.
Well, Texas, you know, that state very much like, we're Texas, we're awesome.
Exactly.
You don't think you need anything else. You don't need anybody else. You've tried to leave the union a few times. But we'll see what happens to you guys. And then today we're brought to you by Third Love, but we'll talk about that later. For now, let's begin the show with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. Three items on the Roper Report, cool, Greg.
A baker's dozen.
First up, Polygon is killing review scores. I'm going to read from Polygon, of course, as you'd expect. They put up a very detailed post on what they're doing and why they're doing it. I've gone in and cherry-picked paragraphs, so if you want more context, check it out, polygon.com. But let's go. Games have changed since we launched Polygon. We're changing with them. We believe that a new strategy focusing on criticism and curation will better serve our readers than the serviceable but ultimately limited review rubric that, for decades, has functioned as a load-bearing pillar of most game publications. As part of this evolution, Polygon will no longer score reviews. Scrapping review scores, while a big change on its surface, is just a small piece of our plan. We've put a lot of thought and effort into this decision and the changes that come with it. We want more opportunities to produce illuminating, witty, and challenging criticism for an audience that enjoys thinking about games and their place in the world. At the same time, we recognize that review scores have served a purpose. We don't see this decision as a stance against review scores. They aren't inherently bad. In fact, they can be very helpful in their efficiency. We don't want to abandon or shame readers who traditionally rely on scores for their brevity and utilitarian function. Without scores, how can we serve readers who simply want to know if a game is worth their time and money without all the friction of a full review? Our solution is a program we're calling Polygon Recommends. To help readers who are short on time know what to play, we will now include the Polygon Recommends badge on essays about games that we strongly believe most of our readers should play or watch. It is not a final verdict on the game, nor does it suggest we have played every moment of what the game has to offer. Instead, the Polygon Recommends badge is a statement that we've played enough of the game to feel comfortable putting our support behind it. When a game receives the badge, it will appear at the top of the essay, review, or video. What now? When a game is released, we may publish impressions of the early hours. We might highlight a small but unexpected detail. Maybe we'll provide a guide to help you navigate the opaque opening moments. It's likely we'll publish something very similar to the classic review every now and then. For the games our audience cares about most, expect a hodgepodge of these things and other ideas too. This isn't an annihilation of our reviews program. You can still expect Polygon's reviews to be sincere, fair, and insightful. We will always be clear about what we've played of a game, on which platform, and how we got access to code. The soul of the reviews program is healthy and strong, but now it's free to inhabit an endless variety of bodies. David, I went back and forth. I saw this initially today breaking on Twitter and all stuff, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. I don't know if it's Games Daily worthy. Obviously, Games Daily is this interesting hodgepodge of its news, its reactions, its inside baseball of what is happening at other sites, obviously, but not necessarily this thing. The reason it's here is because of how much reader mail it got, number one, submitted. And then number two, that I think it opens an interesting discussion. Whatever, I know that people have very strong opinions about Polygon on the internet, as people do about Kind of Funny and Greg Miller and every other website or personality out there. I don't think it's so much about Polygon as much as it's about the pivot here and what that means. What do you take away from this?
My takeaway is similar to, I think I've seen other sites like Kotaku and Eurogamer kind of take a similar pivot and stance, is that they're starting to recognize that games, once they release, they're not done anymore. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest thing, is that, you know, there's patches, there's DLC. You have MMOs that might be totally different 2 years after after launch, that they might not even resemble the same game anymore.
One of the examples they brought up that I did cut out when they were talking about this was Rainbow Six, right? Siege is a completely different game from what it really launched as.
Yeah, and I think that sort of evolving coverage, so that if you go to a site and you look up a game and you find their most recent stories about that game, that'll be reflective of what the game is that day.
Yeah.
As opposed to looking up a review score from 10 years ago, and that game, maybe it's way better now, maybe it got broken through patches, maybe people don't play it anymore. It's hard to really have a definitive score that lasts forever.
Yeah.
Because games nowadays, they're not on cartridges. They don't, you know, ship and then stay that way.
Yeah, exactly.
And so it's very tough. And then just the issue with review scores in general, you know, I think we're sort of evolving our way that we cover games now, that, you know, a score is a very final thing. It's very definitive. And we use scores at Upload VR, but it's something that we've talked about a lot, you know, trying to move away from maybe. And I think there's a lot of people that love having a score to latch onto, but in a way, it maybe it discourages people from reading the full text of the review.
100%. That's something when I was at IGN, we always talked about was the fact that, you know, you have metrics, you see how fast people are on a page or how fast they scroll to the bottom, and so many people do just want the score. What I take away from this is what Polygon is saying is here is true. The things have changed, right? The industry at large has changed. I see this as a way to kind of, if stick with me, mirror what you are seeing internet creators do, independence, right? Like when we came here, we were very much like, we're not doing scored reviews. That's not how we feel we should be doing them. We want you to listen to it. And that works for our audience, but it totally hinders us in terms of getting other places, right? Yeah, I think you look today at Spider-Man review rundowns on Reddit and Reset Era and NeoGAF we were included in, but the first two we were not. Like, right? Like, it is very much like, here are the scored reviews, and they'll put like the Jim Quisition in there and stuff like that. But it's rare that the kind of funny review conversation gets posted with those.
Yeah, because, you know, whenever the people post those roundups, they don't want to summarize your opinion for you.
Right.
You know, that they could pull out a quote maybe, but even then it's hard to find a definitive quote that summarizes your entire half hour podcast.
Not to mention that, again, for a review roundup, especially as they're assembling those,
right?
Do you want to watch our 30 minute conversation to find the one quote? No, you want to jump to the review, usually in the closing paragraph, right? There's a great, this is a great soundbite for what it is.
Right. Or the pro con list or exactly. Know, whatever the case may be.
And what I see when I look at this, I see Polygon really changing the course of who they are and what they want to be represented as. And, you know, it's, again, I cut out a whole bunch of stuff in this letter, and there was a conversation in there of like, you know, I think it's 6 years. 6 years later, the person writing it or the staff writing it was very much like, I don't think this is what the founders of Polygon envisioned we would be here, but we are. And this is what we've flourished into and what we've changed into. And I think that's the biggest thing. And what I take away from this is what I tell people all the time, people who are trying to start their own site or do their own podcast or whatever. And it's, don't try to be IGN. Mm-hmm. Don't try to be that we're going to cover everything the exact same way and put out the reviews, because then you just become another number, another soundbite that gets lost. If you can do something unique, if you can do something interesting,
right,
you have a better chance of finding success. Granted, success is going to look different for everybody. We're kind of funny. It's super successful, but we have 238,000 subs. Like, that's not a lot, right? When you look at a YouTube channel and our views do, you know, 20,000, 30,000 per video, that's not a lot. Right. If I was IGN, I'd be like, what the fuck? Like, it's for us, that's great, and that's what we want, and for our community, that works. And I think this is Polygon trying to either speak to the community they have or evolve into what they think they want to be. And that's what it totally should be, right?
Yeah, and I think there's one interesting point as well that I think was kind of in the first half where they say, that we believe our readers should play or watch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I think they've really made a big push towards, you know, championing Let's Plays and streamers. And, you know, a lot of people, they don't buy games. They watch people play them, especially for games that are just single player narratives and they don't have a multiplayer component. They don't have an ongoing thing you can play every day.
Yeah.
It's really interesting because for me, I gravitate towards the single player things. As a gamer, I want to go home with my headset. I want to, you know, sit on the couch and just be engrossed in something and not have to talk to anybody else.
Right. I'm in the exact same way as you. And even though we'll talk about Firewall later, getting into Firewall has been so interesting. And last night, Kevin hit me up and he's like, hey, do you want to play? And I'm like, dude, I'm exhausted. The last thing I want to do is like talk to you. You know what I mean? But it's not like I don't love you. It's just like, I don't want to be like doing this whole thing. I just want to sit there, melt into the couch with Portillo on top of me and play something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, the game industry is so big now.
Yeah.
It's so diverse and there's something out there for everyone. Just like there's a site out there for everyone.
Exactly.
You know,
just like there's a YouTuber for every, a podcast for everybody. And that's the thing is, I think so many people chase it of, well, let's morph into what people want, then you get lost because you just become milquetoast, right? Where you hear what you want to be is something that stands out and doesn't appeal to everybody, but the people who it does appeal to are super into it.
Right, right.
I had a question here, but I don't know if we've already covered it. I'm going to read it and we'll decide. Callie from Vancouver wrote in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, my question is in regard to Polygon removing their scores. I understand that the motive for this is to reduce the use of score numbers to make comparisons and arguments between games, which I can agree with because video games are subjective and it's really a matter of personal preference. However, I myself am a mathematical thinker and numbers resonate with me more than words do. People like me will latch on to numbers regardless, and without review scores, the only other number that we can latch on to for comparison would be sales numbers. I think quantifying the critical success is important, and without the ability to associate a number with the critical success, comparisons will lean towards the financial success. I don't see the issue with having both a detailed write-up as well as a quantifiable score. Do you think that Polygon is making the right move for everyone? Do you think review scores are harmful? Thanks, kind of funny fuckers. don't forget to wipe the chicken's ass for this. Jesus, Callie. You went hard at the end. I didn't read that far into it. I was like, this is a really well thought out question. And then a very graphic ending. I don't see an issue with having both a detailed write-up and a score. Do you think Polygon is making the right move for everyone? I do not think they're making the right move for everything.
Right.
I think they're making the right move. They have to make a move for Polygon and what they want Polygon to be. And I think it's similar, like what we've done and everything else. I guess we have answered that.
And one point I want to mention up at the top of her question where she makes the point of the only way I can compare games is through sales numbers. I think looking at review scores as a comparative tool is kind of isn't a good way to use a review score. I think, you know, if you look at a score and see, oh, this shooter got a 9, but that puzzle game got a 7, the shooter's better than the puzzle. You can't do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And when we were at IGN, I lived many lives at IGN, but I was there when we first moved from the 100-point scale to the 20-point scale.
Right.
So instead of it being, you know, 7.8, 9, whatever, it was either a 7.5 or an 8.
And now they
moved
back.
Yeah, now they're back to 100-point scale. I loved moving to 20-point, and I debated trying to keep us from moving back to 100-point because that happened when I was there as well. But it was the argument that I don't think you can get down to that granularity of it, where there isn't a scientific method. Right. There isn't a scientific test where all reviews are created equal. They all get judged the exact same way, so this is what we come out to at the end. It is subjective, and I always like the idea of being able to say, all right, this is the bucket of games that are 7. This is the bucket of games that are 7.5s, and like, how do we compare and do that? And when you get into the granularity of, well, a 9.1 to a 9.2, like, that's how I reviewed a lot of games when I was doing it for myself, but what's a 9 to me is not a 9. To you is not a not, you know,
exactly.
It's so convoluted.
There is no such thing as an objective review.
Yeah,
I think if you want an objective review, then you can just read the back of the box. I mean,
exactly. Here's how many maps there are. Here's how many players it uses.
Yeah. You want someone's opinion. That's what a review is for. And I think getting rid of the score makes the opinion more powerful.
Exactly.
And I think it makes you have to read the review if you want to know the opinion now.
And that's the thing, right? Is it's cultivating and bringing in people who want to do that. So again, it's not for everybody, but I don't think Polygon was ever for everybody. You know what I mean?
It felt weird seeing them on Metacritic, you know, it was almost like that isn't really what they're about. So I think it fits them that they're just moving away from it.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens. But remember, no matter what, if you don't agree with that or that site or whatever, and there's a million other video games, websites, and people to go talk to and think to, and they'll all be using numbers.
Probably literally a million.
For Cali, you don't have to worry. There are lots of numbers out there for you to find and use them to compare. And do we think review scores are harmful? No, not at all. I think they're easy shorthand. Because even now, where Kind of Funny doesn't use review scores, I'll still do it all the time. People are like, well, what would you score it? I'm like, yeah, I would have given it this. You know what I mean? This is where I would have probably put it in. It's nice not to actually have to sit there and be like, fuck, what am I really going to score this? Just be like, I want to get it around this.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. As someone that writes reviews, sometimes I spend more time agonizing over what number I'm going to give it than I did writing the review.
Sure.
Because I have to wrap all of my thoughts and opinions and those 20 hours of experience into a single number.
Yeah.
That's so hard to do.
Yeah.
Especially because, you know, what I thought whenever I wrote the review versus a day later might change. And
oh, sure.
It's tough. It's tough.
Number two on the Roper Report, it's a short one. Henry Cavill is Geralt in Witcher's... I screwed all that up. Henry Cavill, Superman from the DCEU, is Geralt in Netflix Witcher. It's going to be 8 episodes. It's based on the books. They made the announcement today. That's cool.
Yeah, I like Cavill.
His mustache better not get in the way of any other Superman movies, though.
If it does, he can just, you know, lock and load his arms and erase it again.
Yeah, exactly. Totally that was fine. Awesome. That was awesome. I think Henry Cavill does not get enough credit as Superman. He's not given much to work with a lot of times. You know what I mean?
100,000% agree with you.
I think he's awesome. I think he's a huge nerd, which I like a lot. Like he almost missed the call from Zack Snyder for Superman because he was playing WoW or whatever. It's like awesome. Like, cool. Let's see what he does with his character. I like to see that, you know, Netflix is going that hard on it of getting like a movie star to come over and do this.
Yeah. What was that movie he was in before he was Superman?
Stardust.
There was that one. And there was like the 300-esque. Was it?
That's all I can help you with.
I think it was Theseus or something. He was some like Greek hero.
See, you're like, we're going to get 100%. Nope. kindoffunny.com/ you're wrong. They're right there right now.
Oh, dang it. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yep.
So interesting to see what they do with that. It'll be interesting to his take. Worth pointing out again, it is based on the books, not the games. Different takes. I don't expect to just be out there fighting that aborted fetus that was buried in the front yard or whatever. The stillbirth. I don't remember. It was a great mission, but I don't remember it all. Number three, the Black Ops. Black Ops's Blackout player count has been revealed. This is, I'm going to say Javi. Because it's like Javi. Just spelled differently than I usually do. Gwaltnet. Not Javi like who used to make the GameScoop cartoons. You know what I'm talking about. Anyways, Javi over at Game Informer wrote this up. What is the player count? 80. During the beta, anyway. Things could change for retailer post-retail launch. Bunting, this is the guy from Call of Duty, admits that though Treyarch had tested internally with 100 players, the studio is putting the quality of gameplay first over hitting an arbitrary number. Quote, what's really more important to us, rather than a number, is the gameplay experience is as refined as it can be. That That's it. The ideal perfect format for what players are going to play, he says. So we're starting with 80 players, but we've gone higher than that. Whenever we launch the game as a beta or whatever, that's the beginning of something. We're going to actively be participating in the community and taking feedback, making changes, and adapting, evolving the game as feedback rolls in. So there's a lot that can go on that can happen beyond that first impact of the game going out there. We always make fun of the canned PR press release quotes, yeah, but then you read somebody's train of thought. This is why no one transcribes our reviews and puts them up with it, right? Because it's me going, well, spoilers, but blah, 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 spoilers, doesn't make any sense. Anyways.
My first reaction to this is, especially since there's no single player this time, it feels like Black Ops 4 is going to just always be in early access.
Right.
It just seems like they're always going to be tweaking
it.
And this goes back to what we were saying about review scores earlier. This game's never going to be done. It sounds like they're just going to always tweak it and change it.
Right. And, it becomes a Fortnite. It becomes a PUBG. It becomes a whatever. Exactly. These games and services that are constantly changing.
Yeah, because if a review comes out and criticizes there's not enough players, they add more players, then your review score isn't accurate, and it's like,
and so many people then hit you up and like, they changed the one thing you complained about, so is it a 10 now? You're like, well, no, it was more than that. Blah, blah, blah. I've been there.
I think the reasoning's sound, though. I played a lot of Battle Royale games, and not all of them are 100. Some are over, some are under. And as long as the maps are designed well to accommodate the player numbers you've picked, I don't think it matters.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. I've been surprised how many people since the announcement of this have been hung up on hitting that 100 as if that's key to being a Battle Royale game. If the game's designed to support 80, 60, 20, I think that's fine, and that would be good. And it's whatever the vision is, but that's the thing that Black Ops 4 has to prove it has a vision for this, right? Especially to all the haters who think it's just a cash-in, that's just chasing this genre that's super popular.
Right.
I'll tell you what, David. I'm excited to see how many players the final version of this game comes with, but it's going to take me so long to get there. If I wanted news right now, like what came to the digital mom and grop shops today, where would I go?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform, as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday.
It's Tuesday. There's a lot of stuff, so let's get into it. 428 or 428, Shibuya Scramble is on PlayStation 4 and PC. Apocalypse Rider is on PSVR. You know anything about this one?
I think you ride a motorcycle.
Okay.
Yep.
Arcade Islands Volume 1 is on PlayStation 4. Claws of Fury is on Xbox One and PC. Destiny 2 Forsaken is out on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. Dimension Drive is on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. Dragon Quest XI, Echoes of an Elusive Age, is on PlayStation 4 and PC. Full Blast is on PlayStation 4. God Wars The Complete Legend is on Switch. Moonfall Ultimate is on PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. Ninjin Clash of Carrots is on PS4, Xbox One, and Switch. Planet Alpha is on PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and PC. Shadows Awakening is on PS4, Xbox One. Slime Rancher is on Xbox One and PS4. Son of a Witch is on PlayStation, on Switch. That's a good name. The Long Dark is on PS4 and Xbox One. And Zone of Enders, The Second Runner, Mars, is on PlayStation 4 and PC. You point out
that game has VR support on both PS4 and PC.
Have you played it with it?
I played it at E3. I did a demo.
Yeah.
It feels really good in VR.
Really?
I mean, I personally don't get motion sick. I'm blessed that way.
Is it because you've done it for so long now?
I've never been affected by it. Yeah, okay. I've purposefully tried games that make people sick so that I can see, kind of see what it feels like, but it doesn't affect me.
Yeah.
And I have some friends, another editor at Upload VR, he gets motion sick very easily.
Oh, really?
And he's in VR all the time. Sure. So, I mean, it's just one of those things.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Effect. Like, my wife's super prone to it. Mm-hmm. And I've had it on. It's usually a weird movement thing where
it is. Yeah. It is. Yeah, a lot of the lateral movement will do it. And if it's very quick, jerky stuff, then that tends
to. When we first got PlayStation VR and we were tinkering around with it, it was, for me, the Tomb Raider experience of being able to walk through Croft Manor. There was something about the smooth turning and, like, when it was like free, because it says, like, hey, we're starting you with the quarter turns, we're doing all that. And then eventually, like, all right, you've unlocked the ability to do this, but be careful. And I was like, no big deal. And I put it on and I was like, oh my God, no, I can't do this. And even Firewall, like, got home, I played a whole bunch of preview events, loved it. Got it home, played it a night standing up, and I was like, piece of cake. And then the next day, starting it sitting down, I played sitting down for the first time, and I was like, oh, like, I wasn't motion sick, but it was like, this is different. And it's interesting that sitting now is confusing my body because it feels like it's standing.
Yeah. The Firewall is one of those games that I like to play standing as well, just because your character's standing, so it feels more appropriate.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm playing a game where I'm in a cockpit or driving a car, I'll sit down because it feels weird to you know, do this while I'm standing up in my room.
Yeah, it feels
a little strange.
And I guess the thing is, it's still tricking your body, which is so weird to think about. I always talk about, for me, one of the motion sick moments was Riggs on PlayStation VR.
Mm.
Not playing the game itself. It was when you put it on. It was the first demo I took for it. I put on PSVR, and we were coming out of the bay on an elevator.
Oh,
and the elevator stopped, and
uh-huh.
my body felt like it should keep going because there was no gravity or no change in the elevator. So I kept, and I was like, whoa. Like
That was an ambitious launch title.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. And, you know, it sucks that studio got shut down.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought the game was pretty good, but, you know, that was a tough game to launch a new platform with.
You got to worry about a player base and how many people are on there and stuff. Yeah. That's why it's crazy to see Firewall doing so well. You were talking about where did it rank on the UK charts you were talking about?
Last week, it ranked 11.
Yeah.
So that's out of all physical retail launches. And the game didn't even launch in the UK until Wednesday.
Wow. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's pretty good.
And that was, you know, for me, I was, you know, the bellwether test is I was jumping into the PSVR subreddit and like that, it was all PS, it was all about Firewall.
Man.
And then like when I'm tweeting out about, hey, me and Kevin want to play with people, we've had no shortages. Best friends coming
right,
out. So
right.
It's been awesome.
It has.
We'll talk more about that later. For now, though, new dates. Valkyria Chronicles, the original, is coming to the Nintendo Switch. Sega said it is not, however, the remastered version of the game that launched on 2016 on PlayStation 4. This is all from IGN, by the way. Players who have Valkyria Chronicles 4 in their Switch library will get $5 off Valkyria Chronicles eShop price of $19.99. Valkyria Chronicles goes on the eShop October 16th. Valkyria Chronicles 4 launches September 25th. And I can't wait. Wizards Tourney is coming to PC on September 21st, while the PlayStation 4 version also has no official release date. Now it's time for a reader mail. We're going to start with all your Spider-Man questions, but first, I'm going to tell you we're brought to you by Third Love. Third Love is a bra company online. Yes, that's right. Kind of Funny is diverse enough that somebody wants to sell bras with us, and we're all about it. You get a perfect fit using thousands of real women's measurements. Third Love designs its bras with breast size and shape in mind so that they fit impeccably and feel even better. The most sizes of any brand, Third Love just added 24 new sizes, making them the industry leader with a total of 70 sizes. You can skip the trip. Find your fit in 60 seconds online, order, and try it on at home. No more awkward fitting room experiences. Of course, when they sponsored us for this, they sent us codes to give to Joey, Gia, Jen, all of them, they're using it. Gia's report came back that she likes the one that's strapless, and then her friends are using the black one, and apparently they like that one a lot, and so do the men in their lives, is what we've been told. That's what I've been told. Third Love has the most size of any brand, cups A through H, bands up to 48, and it's all satisfaction guaranteed. Returns and exchanges are free and easy. Third Love knows there's a perfect bra for everyone, so right now they're offering my listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/games now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/games for 15% off today. As I said at the top of the show, David, we've reviewed Spider-Man PlayStation 4 over on YouTube.com/kindoffunnygames, podcast services around the globe. It is a spoiler-free review. You don't have to worry about that. Many questions came in about it. These are also spoiler-free. So, strap in, everybody. For the record, you haven't played yet. You've played...
I played
stuff?
At E3.
Okay.
I haven't played for review though. No. So I'll try to channel their questions as well because I'm curious.
Yeah. And of course, chime in. I think a lot of them are top level, and just having some stick time might help you. Damien writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, "Excellent job on the spoiler free review of Spider-Man. I can hardly wait for Friday. Would you be able to get more into the controls of the game, particularly around the web slinging aspect? How do you traverse? Is it a button combination, or is it more quick time timing type situation? How challenging is it to pull off combos in battles? Does it ever feel repetitive? Thanks for everything you guys do, and have a wonderful day." From your previews, first blush, did you find it intuitive and you understood what was happening?
It took me about a minute or two because the preview that I jumped into didn't really have much of a tutorial. Mm-hmm. They just kind of plopped you in the open world, said, you know, go swing around.
Yeah.
So I had to kind of fiddle with the controls and figure it out. But once I realized that it was kind of, you know, more, it was kind of rhythmic.
Yeah.
Using R2 and then leaping off of things and running up walls and jumping and, you know, going, it's so fluid.
Yeah. That's the biggest thing about it is it's fluid. It controls like we all kind of think we remember Spider-Man 2 controlling,
I think that's a really good way to put it, that it feels like the way you remember Spider-Man 2.
I must have put, 30, 35 hours into the game or whatever. I've platinumed it. We'll get to those questions later. There's a lot of those. But it is that thing that rhythm is a great way. There is a rhythm to the game that in the beginning I wasn't for sure getting. So, it's swing with R2, right? It's at the end of your jumps, hit X to launch yourself off.
Mm-hmm.
But then there is stuff like when you're running up the side of the building, you see the X prompt. And if you hit it, it launches you up and you'll perch. But if you hold it after that, you spring off of it. You can do that with any surface. So like you're swinging and you can do, and I might be, brush me up here, but I believe R1, L1, right? When you see corners or you see water tower tops.
Yeah, sort of the slingshot launch.
And you sling yourself to it. And again, you hit X as you get close and you can get a, you can launch off it. But if you hit it in perfect rhythm of where you should be, you get a huge boost off of it. And then as you know, you get up in the air off of that. If you hold down L3, you like dart towards the ground, giving you a whole bunch of speed that you throw out your web at the last second and swing yourself up and get a huge boost that way. And in the beginning, you know, like, well, what I'm swinging and it's very much like I'm in the air spinning, looking for an L1 and R1. What can I do? How do I get that angle? I wasn't using the web, or I guess the, you know, dive bomb moved and then web myself back up. But by the end of it, it was all so second nature that I did find myself, you know, I wasn't using fast travel for the most part because it is so much fun to go. And it is I want to springboard off it. And it was that thing now of kicking myself up really high in the air and be like, oh, there's a water tower over there. And just knowing it, by the time I get there, I'd be able to L1, R1, not having to wait for those prompts to pop up. You learn the city. You learn the traversal mechanics.
Yeah, and I love how adaptive it is, so that, you know, like you're saying, whenever you're running up a building, you can perch or you can launch or you can kind of pull yourself off or jump this way.
Yeah,
because during E3 and watching the demos, it looks like there's a lot of scripted moments, but it's actually just the animations are so good.
Yeah, it's how good it looks that you think that you're just doing.
You actually have total control all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it is easy to, you know, change where you're going and spin it around. Damien did ask, you know, how challenging is it to pull off combos? Does it ever feel repetitive? It's going to feel as repetitive as you make it be. What I found is that there's, you know, different groups of enemies you're fighting throughout the game that require different tactics. And it wasn't until later in the game where I was taking on some newer enemies where I started really using my web gadgets. And then once I did that, I was like, oh, well, why the hell wasn't I using this for everything else earlier on? And then I started using them on the fights I'd already gone through, like, because, you know, I'm doing different missions or whatever, same guys. And it was like, oh, this is way easier to clown all these guys out. I'm taking them out faster, not only because I'm more powerful, I'm leveling all that up, but because now I am, okay, I'm not waiting for this to refill. I'm switching over to this weapon to take that out, which refills the other weapon, and it's just a quicker system of it like that. So I really think if you experiment, you're not going to get bored and repetitive of it. And I loved the fighting stuff. I wanted more of that. I have seen, you know, a lot of people saying, not a lot of people, I have seen reviews and other personalities online being like, love the game, it's amazing. Felt some of the street crime was like, you know, a bit repetitive. And it is, you're being dropped in the same situations. Obviously, there's a carjacking, there's a kidnapping, there's a whatever. There's only so many of those kinds of missions. But I want them just to put out more. I want them to give me more reason to turn it back on and go back and do that.
Yeah, it's hard to articulate a criticism that is just, I want more.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, how do you know that you've gotten enough? Or how do you know that there wasn't enough and too much? Yeah, it's very tough.
This is a great example here. I'll jump to just, everyone knows I'm obsessed with trophies, obviously. But I'm going to bring it up because I think it plays in a bit to what I'm talking about here, or what I'm driving at, of the fact that all I want is more. I platinum this game and it didn't overstay its welcome. We Are All Geeks writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, the Spider-Man platinum trophy. I'm not a trophy hunter, but I am definitely interested in getting this one. How difficult was Spider-Man to platinum? And if you can answer, are there any trophies locked to the difficulty settings? Thanks for years of entertainment. We Are All Geeks and everyone listening. No, the platinum, this is one of the best platinum trophies I've done in a long time, because it is, hey, do everything, go through and, like, you know, touch a little bit of everything, but it's not like there's challenges in the game. It's not perfect every challenge. You get a gold medal in every challenge. It's okay. Like, try them out, do this, great, you've experimented that, go through and there's hidden things you have to find. There's all these, like, it's a great platinum trophy in the way that it's not missable. There are no difficulty settings tied to it. It's an achievable platinum. It's a respectable platinum. People are always like, what's a platinum you're proud of? Like, I'm proud of this one because I love the game so much and it means that I did go through and do everything. So it's a great one. It's not missable. Even Tim's thinking about getting it because he's the same way of, I want to do everything. I want to see everything this game has to offer. I want to play it all. And, you know, leading up to it is what I talked about of wanting from Spider-Man. It's that I wanted a world to get lost in, and that's totally what they deliver here.
Yeah, I'm not a platinum hunter.
Yeah.
It's not something I really gravitate to. I think I maybe only have 4 or 5 platinums. I think, obviously, the Walking Dead games.
I was going to say, they're all Telltale.
Yeah. And then I think the only one that I really went outside of the box to get was Darksiders.
The
first one. I loved that game so much. I went back and replayed it, got the special armor, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And this definitely seemed like one of those games that could scratch that particular itch.
And that's the thing, is like, for me, I just didn't want it to end. And that's so rare that I usually am planning a game, and by the end, I'm like, all right, I'm ready to move on to something else. Whereas this one, it was, man, I just wanted to keep going. I wish there's more. And that's why, personally, I'm so excited about the DLC. Like, great, you know, October, November, and December, I'm getting an episode. I'm 100%.
I think a big part of that is just how fun it is to move across the world.
Yeah.
You know, you don't get bored going doing the side missions because you're always doing something that's engaging.
Now, I'm going to read you a question here. You might say, I don't care about the Spider-Man trophies, Greg. I just care about other trophies. Maybe you're saying, I don't care about trophies at all. If you don't care about trophies at all, this doesn't help you. But here what it is a PlayStation 4 tidbit. I'll read the question and answer it for you. Andreas Lennartson writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, this is an important trophy question for Greg. I'm a kind of funny best friend who has been privileged enough to play Spider-Man early, parentheses, OMG, it's incredible, for a review I've written for a small Swedish game news site called PlayerOne.se. Everyone go check it out, PlayerOne.se. I've completed the story, done every side quest and activity. I have 100% completion. I have also unlocked all the non-hidden trophies, but one hidden trophy remains, and I cannot, for the love of God, figure it out. So, Greg, you have the platinum. You got them all. What am I missing? Please, Greg, I can smell the platinum. I hear it calling my name.
Oh, that's tough.
Well, first off, I wouldn't know what you're missing. Trophies still aren't sunk. I can't put them up there. I've been saying I had a chance at being the first person in the world to get this. Titus dashed my hopes on Twitter and was like, when did he get it? And somebody's like, Tuesday. He's like, ah, good, I beat him. Like, fuck. God damn it. You deserve it, Titus. Here's something, though, I learned from our friend Brian. PS4 trophies on YouTube, PS4 trophies on Twitter as well. I felt like such a horse's ass about this. I hit him up and I was like, hey, do you have Spider-Man? I'm sure I have two hidden trophies. I'm trying to figure out what they are, whatever. And he responded back. He's like, what do you mean hidden? And I mean, while on the trophy list, they're hidden. He's like, dude, they patched in about a year and a half ago. You can just look at hidden trophies. And I was like, what?
Really? And I did not know that.
You go to your trophy list, you go to the hidden trophy, you click on it, and it'll go in and it'll say hidden. And then there's a button that says square to reveal trophy details. And
that
I was like,
blowing my mind.
I hit him up and I'm like, I know you know more about trophies than me, but I know the internet thinks I know a lot about trophies. You just blew my, and he's like, I don't know how you didn't know that. They patched in. I'm like, I didn't see the firmware patch notes on it. I don't know. I totally missed it. And I felt like such a moron, but Andreas, good news. You can just go to it, click on it and do it. I bet I know what it is though. And I can't say it cause it's a spoiler. It's a cool moment, but I bet I know what it is. Cause when I popped it, I was like, oh, well, I had to go look for it. Then I popped it. I was like, oh. Once again, I was like, ew. Let's see where I want to go next. Ryan wrote in and said, I heard another reviewer say that the controls weren't great in confined space and when trying to be slow/stealthy. They claimed that in the open world, when trying to love/fight fast, the controls were amazing. Trying to love/fight fast. Anyways, but when stealing or trying to be slow and accurate in movement, the controls lacked. Do you agree? And overall, what are your improvements you look forward to in the sequel? It's a different pace. It's not as drastic, I feel, as like Arkham going from fisticuffs and I'm going to do this to being up on perched, Predator mode. But it is Predator mode. Stealthy modes should play it as Predator mode, which means you're just in the rafters. You're waiting for guys to break off so you can see when they're going to be alone. And then I webbed them up on the wall and stuff like that.
Yeah, I know at E3 there was a boss fight in a bank. And it was a very enclosed space. And it was very strange going from the open world to that suddenly. I think if you know the full game, I'm probably sure the pacing is a little bit more efficient and better about that. Yeah. But it does play very differently when you're not swinging around the city.
Well, that's the thing about it is, you know, when you start the game, I was originally going to try to keep it to ground and pound, right? But then the game is very much like, no, you want to punch people in the air. You want to air juggle. You want to upgrade your webs to be able to pull people up to you and fight them in the air. And once I wrapped my head around that, I felt that whether I was outside or confined spaces, I was fighting for the most part the same way, with the exception of they don't know I'm here yet. I'm webbing everybody. But even then I'm up in the air. I web the dude. Where's the next guy? I think I can. I web zip right to that. Like it wasn't, I was rarely running around on the girders, right? I was like shooting myself over and keeping myself high and like making not chess moves, but something similar to that of like, I knew I was moving over there to get that specific guy. And for me, that kept it down. I didn't have problems with confined space. There's one boss fight where I was very much like, it's not confined. Well, I guess it's more like you're fighting in a giant open air rectangle. And I was like, what am I supposed to do here? And I thought the game bugged and I quit out and came back in. And I was like, oh, I was actually just overthinking it. Just web him. Why didn't I think of that? That's some way to do it.
I got to ask. I'm sure you've gotten this question a lot. Do you deliver pizzas?
You do not deliver pizzas. Okay. No pizza delivery in here. Vincent writes in, though, and says, "Hey there, crew. I had a quick question on the new Spider-Man game. Is there enough to do in the open world besides the story? The hardest thing I think developers have with these type of games is that they create big open worlds, but they don't add enough stuff to do in their worlds and end up making them feel hollow. Thanks." Oh, I thought there was plenty to do. I thought they do a great job of making a realized New York that I want to exist in and I want to live in. And, you know, you're swinging around and random crimes are happening. J. Jonah Jameson's radio show is being broadcast. If you drop to the street, you can, you know, there's daily bugles to get. There's photos to take. There's backpacks to find. Like, and it was the thing, as I talk about in the review, that when a new side mission, in quotes, but even like side activity would open up, main story for me would stop and I would just go get all that. Because I felt like that was... the game is so great at I do those things, I get the rewards, I get better at just being Spider-Man that I wanted, and I was encouraged to stop what
so
I was
doing. So as someone that kind of compulsively pursues Platinum Trophies, what about the side content in this game felt more attractive to you?
I think that what feels about it is that it feels like it's part of the story.
Okay.
It's similar to a God of War, where like the side stuff was so great that I was like, oh man, this feels... It's the same thing here where... I talked about this in the review. Don't worry. And I know I'm getting made fun of on our own Reddit about this. No spoilers. but like you go and you collect the backpacks and you're finding trinkets in the backpacks that are world building and building Peter's backstory. But then, you know, I found one. It was a throwaway thing and Spidey had a throwaway line about it. And then hours later, I did a mission and Mary Jane referenced it. Not the item, but referenced the event I referenced from another thing. And it's like, oh, this was a real thing. You know, and Peter's holding this memento that also means as much to this character as it did to him. And it's like, that's a cool idea.
That's pretty
right?
cool. Yeah.
And the, you know, Tim brought it up too of the J. Jonah Jameson show is a call-in show. And so it's referencing what you do. And it turns out it's referencing what you don't do as well, which I never got because I'm obsessive in stopping. But like Tim was like swinging to a story mission. And there was like, oh, there's a car accident or a shooting or whatever. And he kept going. And so like the next thing was like, I got to call her on the line. And it's this woman like, yeah, this thing happened. And Spidey swang by and didn't help. And he's like, that's what I thought. Menace. Wow. You know what I mean? And it's like, wow.
That's cool.
I never heard that dialogue. Instead, all mine were like talking about how great Spider-Man is because he was doing these things. And yeah, I didn't realize it was that dynamic.
I can't even imagine how many angry people in the Old West would call in Red Dead. How many people I just let die. I just
John Marston rode right by and didn't do a damn thing about anything. Game Doctor wanted to know about the quality of the main story and the extras. As I said, I think it's awesome. The one thing I say about the main story in the review is that I just feel like it didn't take enough crazy chances, but even on retrospect, I don't know how much of that's fair. I think it builds a really great base storyline, and there are a lot of, oh, I didn't see that coming moments. It's just like, I feel like if I was to tell you, here's the cast of characters, what do you think's going to happen? You'd probably nail it pretty well.
So for me, I'm not a comics guy.
Yeah.
So all my knowledge of Spider-Man is video games and movies.
Oh, sure.
Do you think this game can still be awesome for people that don't read the comics?
Oh, yeah. I think that's the thing. If you don't know the comics, there's going to be so many things that happen in there that are like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. Okay. That's a really cool idea.
The trailer is the first time I'd ever heard of Mr. Negative. I don't even know who
that
is. Oh,
yeah, you're going to be fine. Okay. Yeah, you're going to be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, that was somebody was texting me this morning who's playing through it for a review. And was just like, oh my God, is blank. And I was like, yeah, that's a well-known thing. But yeah, no, that's awesome. Like, you know what I mean? Like, enjoy it. I'm glad. And that
wasn't me,
fucking dork. Like, I'm like, I want people to do it. And I think that's what I talked about in the review of, I think, took a little bit away from it was things that have been... either through previews or, because even like when Andy went and previewed it, there was stuff he saw that he couldn't talk about. But of course, I was like, I'm under the same embargo you are. Just tell me everything. And he told me, and I was like, oh, that's really cool. But then to get to the game, I knew that was going to happen.
Right.
So what would it have been to like gone in blind about that?
That's a pretty classic game journalist problem.
Right? Yeah, it's one first of the, world problems.
It's one of those things. I hate previewing games that I'm looking forward to because I want it to be fresh. And sometimes you just can't avoid it.
Exactly.
You have a job to do. So it's,
exactly.
Yeah.
Do this thing. I'm looking over here. I'm talking about this, doing this. I'm talking like this while I figure out what I want to do.
There were a few questions about review copies.
You want to do that one?
Yeah, sure.
Scooby B00 gets the final Spidey question for this episode of Kinda Funny Games Daily and says, hey, what's up, everybody? I had a quick question about review copies. My question is, how do you expect people to support developers by telling them to go buy the game when most of you do not pay for the games you talk about? The most recent example is your Spider-Man review video you guys did. Towards the end of the video, Tim said, go buy this game, and I couldn't help think, why should I buy the game if you guys didn't buy the game? Greg, you always preach about supporting the devs who work so hard on these massive games, and it just breaks my heart to think that a regular person like myself, who has bought countless games, has done more for the industry than most influencers have done. An example of a person who does this is ACG. He gets review copies, and he also buys a copy of the game and gives it away to a Patreon supporter. I wish you all the best. P.S. I know you buy season passes for games you really like, but I'm talking about buying games. Scooby B00. I don't like that question. I don't like it either, and I'm not here to debate who does more for the games industry than anybody
else. I'm not a fan of that part at the end there. I don't think that was a really justifiable thing to say, but I think, you know, the question of buying games versus not buying them as a reviewer, as an influencer.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I think on the flip side, you can make the same argument that if you bought a game, you might hold it to a different standard than one you didn't buy because you want your investment to be worth it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's kind of, it goes both ways. And, you know, whenever you get a game from a publisher ahead of time to review it, you're doing that so that you can provide information to your community.
And your consumers, yeah.
Exactly.
They're consumers, right?
Exactly.
And that's the thing is, like, I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
And I can only say I've never lost perspective on what $60 means.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I remember trading in my entire collection so I could get the newest, latest thing and go on this way.
And the whole point of cost as well. I mean, everyone values their time and, you know, their
right.
entertainment differently.
Yeah.
And so it's just getting that out of the equation and evaluating the product for what it is, I think is a better way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, that's always what I think we hang our hats on when we talk about reviews, right? Is if it was engaged and if I could go. And I think, honestly, even though it's, you know, shifted very much from when I was at IGN and I hate this game, I'm still going to play it and I'm going to tell you all the things about it.
Right.
Me saying I started Game X and only got an hour in before I was like, I'm bouncing, this isn't cool. My whole thing is like, my time, if you agree with me on how I usually feel about video games, you can then extrapolate from that maybe this isn't worth your money, and that then it does become as so many people, is it a PlayStation Plus game? Is it going to be on sale? Is it going to be these things?
Yeah.
I think we still have that perspective on how much $60 is worth and what it matters. And I would say that, like, whether you, Scooby, have done more for the industry buying games than I have because you've bought more of these games, the amount of people I would think that have gone to buy something or that I've hopefully turned on to something they wouldn't have tried, I would hope is supporting the system and moving it on that.
Yeah, line. Yeah. And I mean, at the same time, it's, our job isn't to support the system. It's to inform consumers, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And I think we're conflating two points there, right?
Yeah,
of course,
what
my job is for the Kind of Funny Best Friends to do this. But in terms of when I am like, support developers, buy new games, obviously. Yeah, you could make it because you get your codes for free, but then I do buy the season passes, and I am often buying games and giving them away. But it's a convoluted, it's a complicated point. Not
it's,
convoluted.
It's something that I think commenters and people online are just always going to bring up.
Sure,
and it's, I mean, that's just part of how it goes.
Yeah, it's the same way of movie reviewers getting to go see the movie for free.
I mean,
right?
I get into E3 for free. I get into PAX for free because I'm there to cover it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a system, and if you don't like it, I guess enter the system, but don't let them buy things for you. The giving away of games is a really cool idea, I agree with. But of course, the money we're not spending on the products we're reviewing, I guess, is allowing us to buy more, or not allowing us to hire more people and support more editors who are making more content and all these different
giveaways
things.
Giveaways are cool, though. I heard there's going to be one.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, we're giving away a bunch of games today. Hashtag game provided by PlayStation.
There you go.
For Firewall. 0 hour. No, zero. No, that's right, right?
0 hour. Yeah.
It's so confusing.
It's a bad name.
It's a real bad name. Yeah. Until I was like four games in, I was like, oh, every game is about the firewall coming down. I have to bring the firewall down. All right, cool. I always thought that was like a mode we were playing at preview events. And they're like, no, that's why I'm like, oh. Still a bad name, and then 0 hour is so close to Horizon Zero Dawn that every time I say it, I'm like, that doesn't sound right. I digress. I want to toss you one VR question before we talk about Firewall.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Taylor Jones writes into kindoffunny.com/KFGD and says, hey, Greg and David, this last Sunday I bought an Oculus Rift, and all I've bought so far was a little game called Beat Saber. I've put many hours into this game, and I am ready to pick up some new titles. What would you say are the top games I should try? Thanks for everything, you two, to Taylor. Of course, I'm only versed in PlayStation VR.
Okay.
I cannot fucking wait for Beat Saber, because I played Beat Saber in the office. We have a Rift. We just rarely use it. And Beat Saber is awesome and epic.
So good.
What should he be playing on Rift? I don't know what's hot over there.
First thing I would say is, if you have a Rift and Beat Saber already, if you aren't, you should download custom songs.
Uh-huh.
That's the first thing I would say, because there are modders out there that have already made tons of songs. I mean, you can do Beat It from Michael Jackson, Gangnam Style. I was going to say,
so it's, is it like Rock Band or kind of, where like the songs that are, I would know, and Weezer.
Exactly, okay, exactly. So there's a huge modding community. So if you haven't done that yet, you should. But beyond that, it really kind of depends on what your tastes are. You know, I mean, if you bought a PS4 and you asked for the top games, it kind of depends on what your tastes are. So, I mean, as a Rift user, I would imagine you're probably using mostly Oculus Home or Steam. There's some great games on both of those platforms. I think Skyrim VR is amazing.
Yeah,
absolutely love that game. I mean, even if you've played it outside of VR, it's worth replaying in VR. It totally changes your perspective whenever you're physically holding a shield and you're bashing a dragon in the face or riding on the back of a dragon across Tamriel. It's wild. It's really crazy. If you're a fan of, you know, shooters, then there's a lot of good ones. Robo Recall is a free one he probably got with the Rift, or she. There's a Lone Echo is a fantastic
ones in Echo Arena. So
yes.
Good. Yeah.
Echo Combat comes out very soon.
Yeah, and I was playing that one too.
All the games by Ready at Dawn, all those Echo games are fantastic. Yeah. Those are Rift exclusives. Marvel is one that just came out.
Powers United VR.
Yeah,
right?
So if you have friends to play with, it's fun to jump in every now and then. You can be Spider-Man.
Yeah.
So
okay.
You know,
okay.
Hashtag relevant.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of really good stuff for the Rift. It's really depends on what, I guess, your interests are, because even if you don't like shooting, if you don't like action games, I mean, there's a lot of really contemplative, slow paced, you know, walking simulator style games in VR that are fantastic. They translate over really well.
For you, you know, being games editor at Upload VR, where are we at right now with the state of VR games? Because it was that everyone was so hot about it.
Right.
It launched, and I'm saying it, PlayStation VR launched, which is what I was paying the most attention to, along with Rift and all these things.
Yeah.
And then it got quiet. Mm-hmm. And I've been impressed, as I say a lot on this show, that it got quiet, and I feel like investors and other people were like, oh, what the hell's going on? Whereas gamers were very much like, all right, no, we knew what we were buying this for. We knew we were getting Gen 1 games. We knew we were getting experiences. And I've been so shocked that there wasn't more, oh my God, PlayStation screwed me. I can't believe, you know what I mean? Like, everybody's like, no, no, we love it. The PlayStation VR subreddit I talk about all the time. Like, they're in love with this thing. And every day I see new people on there buying it.
It's pretty steadily growing, that subreddit. I think early adopters in general understand that trajectory of, you know, hype and then kind of the fall and all that. But for me, I think it's kind of a good sign that VR is no longer this hyped future technology, that it's just become part of our consumer market now.
Yeah.
You go to E3, you go to PAX, and you'll see a demo for a PS4 game, for a Rift game, for a PC game, a mobile game. It's just part of the market now.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good sign, that it shows that it's kind of become just another avenue for gaming, which I think is great.
So why right now do you feel Firewall's doing so well?
I think it's really kind of gotten a really perfect storm of situations where the PSVR is the biggest headset, 3 million headsets out there, which is a lot.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's 80 million PS4s, but only 3 million headsets. That sounds like only a small amount.
Yeah.
But when you put it into perspective, I think Uncharted 4 only sold like 8 million copies and is the best selling PS4 game. So, I mean, you have to think of it in terms of everyone doesn't buy every game or every device.
Let alone, a device this complex and expensive.
Yeah. So, I mean, 3 million headsets is a lot.
Yeah.
So, a game that is almost entirely multiplayer, it needed a platform like that. I don't think it could have done as well on Rift or Vive.
Yeah.
Rift or Vive has shooters out there already that have a strong community of a couple hundred people that play kind of every day, that, you know, compete online and at different leagues and stuff. But Firewall, every time I jump on, there's new people.
Oh, yeah.
I'm meeting people every day.
If you didn't know, and just to give you an elevator pitch, of course, we talk about this in the Gamescast. It's up right now. Firewall is 4v4 online multiplayer. There is the tutorial section where you can run missions with friends or whatever, but it's meant to jump in 4v4, have a squad and go, and it's VR Rainbow Six. It's
absolutely,
it's terrorist hunt, where one team's attacking, one team's defending. You're defending this computer that has a firewall up and stuff like that. And it's awesome. It's incredibly, I can't get over how good it is. And what I kept saying on the Gamescast was, you know, I had that moment that first night of, I have the VR unit on, I'm playing with Kevin. We have two kind of funny best friends with us because I just tweet out, hey, join us. And I'm talking and I'm looking over at their characters in the lobby and I'm talking to them like they're there and I'm laughing about that. And it's all running seamlessly. I'm changing my guns. You know, blind fire works. I'm aiming down. And it was just like, this, I don't want to say it was the first time, but it's definitely the most recent example and the first time in a while where I'm like, fuck, we are living in the future. Right. That I'm doing this in my living room right now, but I feel like I'm in this, you know, cardboard mansion where I'm fighting all these guys. It was crazy.
Yeah, I think it has a really good balance between accessibility and feeling like the future, like you said.
Yeah.
Because I think on Rift and Vive, so many developers get obsessed with letting you manipulate and do things as immersively as possible.
Yeah.
But the downside to that is entertainment and accessibility, where, you know, I play a game like Onward or Pavlov on the Rift or Vive.
Yeah.
And I have to physically, you know, eject the magazine, put it in the gun, rack the chamber, that stuff. It can be overwhelming.
Sure.
And it's a little frustrating. I fumble sometimes. Whenever I try to pull the grenade pin, sometimes I accidentally grab the grenade and I throw it before I pull the pin. There's a lot of weird moments like that in VR, but using the aim controller, they get rid of all that.
Right.
You know, they focus on the immersion of pointing and shooting, which is all that really matters.
Yep.
And they assign buttons to crouching or reloading or switching, and it feels great.
And that's the thing, is it feels natural.
It does.
Even when I was sitting there like on night one, where I was like, "Oh fuck, how do I throw a grenade?" And Kevin's like, "Turn the aim controller in your hand sideways, and it's a DualShock." And I was like, oh, okay, yeah. Right, you know, L1, L2 is over here. Yeah. And then, thanks, Kevin. That was a brilliant way to figure it out. Yeah. I'm like, swing it back. And then every button that normally would be those buttons is that button. And I was like, got it. Thank you.
Right, yeah. I mean, my wife does not play video games.
Yeah.
But she's obsessed with Firewall.
Yeah.
I went out and bought a second aim controller for home so that we could play together.
Are you able to find them now? I remember when they first launched with Farpoint, that they were really tough to come by. Are they easier to find now?
Yeah, I haven't had any issues.
Okay, cool. Yeah, then,
I get on at, you know, 2-3 a.m. and people are online over.
Oh no, I meant buying the aim controller.
Oh like, no, yeah, it's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, I walked into a GameStop and they had a bundle, I just got the controller by itself. Yeah.
Yeah, we've said it before, of course. I've said it multiple times. But this game was sent to us by review for PlayStation, just like Spider-Man. So I mean, take it with a grain of salt. But yeah, I can't get over how much I love the fucking game. Like, it's what I love playing. And it was like going to PAX. It was like, oh, cool, PAX is going to be great. Kind of wish I was still playing Firewall. You know what I mean? Like, I want to play Firewall with Kev. Ladies and gentlemen, as we said, PlayStation sent a bunch of Firewall codes in. They sent an initial 8, but then I had 2 extra. Because 8, of course, 4v4. We're going to win. Joey? Joey's in the other room. Of course, if you didn't know, you can win giveaways we do on Kinda Funny in a very simple fashion. You can be in the Twitch chat like so many of you are, or you can support us on patreon.com/kindafunny or patreon.com/kindafunnygames. That gets you entered. And of course, if you're a Twitch sub, you're entered to get all the giveaways we do as well. Plus today, I roped in YouTube users. That way, because this goes up on YouTube, I'm going to go I put in the random number generator, all these different ways of how to win. And so what I came up with was 2 people watching live and Twitch win. Joey, do you have those names for me? Slack them to you. Oh, okay. Joey slacked them to me. Hold on. The winners from the Twitch chat that are live: Laser Ramon, great name, and Rick X Dog. Then
woof woof.
Yeah, well, that was good. Twitch sub Berg X. Well, it's Burgers B, but an X instead of that. Patreon kind of funny person Warren Moore. Patreon kind of funny games Chase Burnaman, and then Patreon games Gabe Brown. Twitch sub Neo J2. And then I have 3 people from YouTube who will randomly win once this goes up on YouTube. I will do that work. But yeah, I'm so into Firewall.
I wish I was playing right now.
Me too. Yeah.
No offense. I like you, but I wish I was playing Firewall.
We were talking about this before. It's like, it's cool having a job where you talk about games, but I really wish I was playing the games. Yeah. Like, that'd be a way better thing to do. What level are you ballpark right now? Or how much time have you put into Firewall?
Time put in, I would probably say easily over 20 hours.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Probably close to 30 at this point.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Kevin and I have done, like, I think 2 or 3 nights, and it's that thing of we were also playing right at launch, so there were connection problems. And
yeah, at launch it was a little hard.
We were squatting up and then going in, but this whole squad wasn't on the team. You're like, what the hell? What's going on?
Yeah, so I did some games with the developers while I was streaming, and I did, you know, some private lobbies so I could just get in and make sure that there were no issues. But I think I'm level 17 right now, so I'm getting up there.
It's another, I think, a bummer. I know it has for some people. It's a video game. Why do we care? But the fact that private matches don't give you XP.
Yeah.
Like, I want to unlock cool stuff, but if I go into a private match where I can, and what Kevin and I were talking about is we think we're just going to start doing private matches because we're so bad. We're in public matches.
What level are you right now?
6 or 7. You know what I mean?
Okay, so let me tell you about something you're going to encounter soon. Have you ran into the signal modifier yet?
No.
So this is an item that someone on the defending team can place within a certain radius of the laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And unless you destroy that signal jammer first, you can hack the laptop. Oh. And you can get creative with it. So, for example, on the office level, if the laptop's upstairs, you can place the jammer downstairs on the ceiling.
Oh, God.
Below the laptop. Yeah.
These are pro-level strats. Oh, I can't be dealing with this yet.
Yeah. Oh, God. It gets so frustrating. You can have two jammers.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And that really makes it very, very intense at the end, because after you kill all of the defenders as the attacking team, you still have to get the laptop.
Right. There's a countdown going and all that stuff. Yeah.
It gets intense. So when there's mines everywhere and you don't know where the jammer is and you have to listen for the beeping and
that's my Trump. See, I want to get to that, but I also want to play with my friends who are as equally as bad as us. So look for more tweets from me and Kevin about playing Firewall. It is time to squad up. This is where one of you writes in to kindoffunny.com/KFGD. You give me your name, username, platform choice, and why you need help in a friend. Today, Miles needs help on Switch. He writes in and says, "Hey, best friends. Just got the new Monster Hunter for Switch. I'm looking to get some best friends to hunt with. I'm Hunter Rank 3, and I'm down to help anyone with urgent quests and would love some help from any higher HR Monster Hunters to help climb the ranks. Best way to reach me would be through Discord. Either PM me or jump in the Kinda Funny Discord and at me there. He is Miles High HI Club #7342. That's his username. I hope this finds everyone well. You found me well, Miles High Club #7342. Thanks for caring and being part of the Kinda Funny Discord.
Not the Miles High Club, but the Miles High Club.
You see what he did there?
I did.
David, we ask everybody watching live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames to go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong and tell us what we screwed up today so we can set the record straight. For everybody watching later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and listening on podcast services around the globe. Let's see what we got here. Hold on. No, I did that thing where I clicked on it and then I screwed it up. Okay, hold on. Kabobs is using You're Wrong to ask a question about Spider-Man. No, that's not how this is going to happen. Zyger, this isn't a You're Wrong. So right now we're still perfect. He says, be careful when watching Spider-Man reviews. GameSpot has a spoiler. Of course, that's a huge problem. Oh, that's why we don't use gameplay. We just talk. It's easier. Okay. Lord of Pwn says, Polygon hasn't had a score for a game since April 25th. The last big title they got one was God of War. So while they started doing this over the summer, they've actually started doing... So while they say they started doing this over the summer, they actually started doing back in the spring. Again, we're not wrong on that one. We had mentioned earlier.
Yeah,
in their
also to that point, they were still giving scores to Metacritic, but they stopped that altogether now.
Yeah, exactly. Now they're just done with scores for everything. McLovin says the movie Henry Cavill was in before Man of Steel was Immortals.
Oh, did he play Theseus? I feel like Theseus is in that movie. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
He did. No, he didn't. Yes, he did. It was Theseus. You're right. You know that part. That was Kebabs adding that piece of information.
All right.
Okay. Flying Monkey says, not a you're wrong, but a deal of the day. EA has announced that the premium pass for Battlefield 1 will be free to purchase from September 11th to September 18th following the Battlefield 5 open beta. Lord of Pwn says, the feature to reveal hidden trophies came in firmware update 4.00 in September 2016, almost 2 years ago. Never knew.
Wow.
And that's saying something if I missed it.
Yeah, I never knew that either.
Robert is screaming that GameSpot's review contains a major spoiler. Beware. Okay. Everybody stay away from the GameSpot review, apparently.
Just the video or the text, too, dude?
Just the video. Well, okay. They're talking about the Zyger mentioned the video review as well. So it must be. Well, he says when watching. So yeah, he's talking about video. Kebab says to be specific, 2016's Uncharted 4 has sold 8.7 million copies, closer to 9 million units.
Okay.
As notable in this year's Monster Hunter World, which has sold 8.3 million copies.
Wow. That game gained ground fast.
Apparently, Zyre says we didn't get it wrong. We missed this. DICE put out more details on their Battle Royale mode. It's called Firestorm, where 64 players can squad up with 16 teams of 4.
Okay.
So not bad. Actually, there wasn't many. The only thing really is that Immortals thing you opened yourself up for. You could have stayed away.
I wasn't wrong, technically. He was Theseus.
Okay. Fair.
Fair. Just saying.
I'll give it to you. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday on a variety of platforms, we run you through the nerdy video game news you need to know about. If you like that, be part of the show, kindoffunny.com/KFGD. David, where can people keep up with you?
They can find me at uploadvr.com. Mm-hmm. That's where we cover all the latest VR news, reviews, all that good stuff. We are on Facebook and Twitter and all those places. But for me personally, you can follow me on Twitter at David_Jagneaux.
Okay.
JAGNEAUX.
There it is.
Yep, yep.
You were great. Thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you. I had a great time.
I'm going to put you on the short list. We got lots of spaces coming up. I'll tell you what. Okay. Tomorrow's host is Gary Whitta for Whitta Wednesday. But until then, it's been our pleasure to serve you.